thinking better and thinking together about life's most important issues. A place to finally meet in the middle, to think freely and reasonably about the big questions of life. This is Thinker Sensitive. Welcome to another episode of Thinker Sensitive. My name is Ryan Ragazine, and I am honored to be your host. Holiness and happiness, purity and pleasure, benevolence and blessedness, virtue and vivaciousness, faithfulness and fulfillment, jurisprudence and joy, character and contentment. What do these seemingly contradictory concepts have in common? What do these ideas, often pitted against each other and often understood as being mutually exclusive, have to do with one another? Is this some kind of paradox? What relationship do these notions share? What does holiness have to do with happiness? What does purity have to do with pleasure? Believe it or not, the idea that the moral life is the good life, and that the way of virtue is the way of vibrancy, and that joy is ultimately found in jurisprudence, dominates classical thinking. Holiness and happiness, in particular, are woven together in classical Christian thought. Augustine recognized that, quote, "no one is happy unless he is holy," end quote. And Aquinas prioritized the happiness of the saints in his Summa Theologica. But the connection between holiness and happiness is probably most acute, most visible, most explicit and secure in the theology of John Wesley, the founder, though perhaps unwittingly, of Methodism and, of course, Wesleyanism. I went to a seminary that was heavily entrenched in the Anglican, Methodist, and Wesleyan traditions. For better or worse, I learned a lot about the life, ministry, and teachings of John Wesley there, who came up in the Anglican Church, the Church of England, before finally forging his own path. Having to hear and learn so much about John Wesley, Wesley this and Wesley that, could be a bit obnoxious and overbearing at times. And to be quite honest, there are a lot of things that John Wesley believed and taught that I personally disagree with. With that said, there's no denying that Wesley lived an extraordinary life. There's also no denying that there are things I have learned from him, things that I will take with me wherever I go. One such thing would be the great emphasis that he placed on promoting justice and mercy in society. But probably the most important and most impactful thing that I learned from Wesley is that holiness is the way to happiness. That true happiness is only found in holiness. That to be happy is to be holy. And to be holy is to be happy. As I mentioned in the intro, this classical and Christian understanding is quite foreign to our modern sensibilities. Living in a hedonistic and quite possibly nihilistic culture, most of us have developed a negative view of rules and laws, classical virtues, traditional morals, and religious teachings on good and evil, right and wrong. We tend to think that such things oppose personal creativity and self-expression, and rob us of pleasure and happiness. In other words, when considering the Wesleyan emphasis outlined just a few moments ago, today, many of us would boast the exact opposite perspective and would take the exact opposite approach, which can be summed up here as the way of hedonism, the way of licentious, the way of lawlessness, the way of anarchy, the way of instant gratification, the way of personal indulgence, the way of physical or bodily pleasures, the way of nature, the way of carnality. This is depicted in much of our popular media today. I'm going to use one of my favorite bands of all time as an example, the indie rock band Modest Mouse. They've actually been around since the early 90s. They came up during the heyday of the grunge era, hailing from the state of Washington. Yet they didn't garner the kind of popularity and acclaim that bands like Nirvana and Pearl Jam garnered during that time. This is in part because they didn't really fit the sound of that period. Modest Mouse is considered to be one of the first indie bands of the modern era. The band didn't gain much mainstream recognition until 2004, the year they released their most accessible album to date, the critically acclaimed Good News for People Who Love Bad News. After writing and playing for more than a decade, Modest Mouse had finally made it. The lead singer of Modest Mouse is Isaac Brock. As far as I know, Brock is the primary songwriter for the band and writes all the lyrics on their records. Brock is also an open and self-designated atheist. The last I checked, anyways. Of course, people's views do sometimes change over time. But either way, Brock has written several songs that are representative of an atheistic worldview. Some of these songs reflect a very negative view of faith and religion. In fact, some of Brock's songs outrightly mock, deride, and insult religious life and religious belief, going so far as to call God an Indian giver, a control freak, and in a roundabout way, an asshole on a track called Bukowski, which is actually a really good song, despite the fact that I disagree with some of the lyrics. On the track Ocean Breathes Salty, which was one of the hit singles off the album that made Modest Mouse popular, Good News for People Who Love Bad News, Isaac Brock reflects rather well the prevailing hedonistic and nihilistic perspective of the age. In the song, Brock writes, quote, "Good luck. For your sake, I hope heaven and hell are really there. But I wouldn't hold my breath. You wasted life, why wouldn't you waste death? You wasted life, why wouldn't you waste death?" At the end of the song, Brock rewords those final lines, proclaiming, quote, "You wasted life, why wouldn't you waste the afterlife?" This is very reminiscent of what Friedrich Nietzsche, who I consider to be the father of modern nihilism, writes about in some of his works. Essentially, what Brock and what Nietzsche and what many in our culture are saying is that the religious life is a wasted life. The popular and prevailing perspective today, at least amongst many young people, and at least as far as I can tell, is that to live according to classical virtues, according to traditional morals, and according to religious ethics, is to waste one's life away. I mean, after all, you only live once. I want to have fun. I want to enjoy this fleeting life as much as I can before I exist, before I persist, no more. But what a waste of a life, of a sensory and physical and carnal existence. To be moral, to be ethical, to follow rules, to obey laws, to make sacrifices for a God that may not even exist, to pursue virtue, to build character, to be disciplined, to live in moderation, to avoid excess, to abstain from certain things, to take the difficult path, the road less traveled, the challenging way. In life, if I'm presented with two alternative paths, one easy and one difficult, why wouldn't I choose the easy one? That's a good question. As I stated in my podcast on the pursuit of pleasure, maybe the reason why you shouldn't choose the easy path is because it won't actually take you where you think it will. Maybe the easy path is not the path to happiness. Maybe it's true that nothing that is good and rewarding and truly worthwhile is easy. Based on personal experience, I would push back pretty hard on the notion that the moral life or the religious life or the virtuous life is a wasted life. I know that St. Augustine would too, as I shared his story on a previous podcast. As countercultural and unpopular as it might be, I would actually turn this prevailing understanding on its head. See, I believe the exact opposite to be true, and I believe it based on firsthand experience. I think it's important to challenge some of these popular ideas in our culture that often go unchecked and are lazily accepted by the masses, as uncool as it may be. I think this is particularly important if we actually care about people, if we're actually concerned about the happiness and well-being of fellow human beings. I think one could make a very strong and cogent argument based mainly on common and shared life experience that the immoral life, the unethical life, the unreligious life, the non-spiritual life, the non-virtuous life is a wasted life. I think we lie to ourselves. I think we lie to other people. I think the world around us lies to us. And I think nearly all of us are eating it up. I've eaten it up. I'm still eating it up. It's such a human thing to do. It's so natural. It's so simple and easy. But it's also so flimsy and hollow. When people say that a religious life or a moral life is a wasted life, they often have three particular behaviors in mind. Isaac Brock almost certainly had these three things in mind when he wrote the lyrics to Ocean Breathe Salty. The three behaviors in question are, of course, heavy drug use, excessive alcohol use, and casual sex. But do these things really make us happier? Do they really make us more whole? Do they make us healthier and more sound? Do they add to our years? Are they good for our relationships? Do they strengthen our relationships? Do they contribute to our overall well-being? That is, to our emotional, physical, and psychological well-being. Do they make us feel better about ourselves? Do they make us more at peace with ourselves? Do they lead to personal fulfillment? Do they engender a greater sense of self-worth? Do they positively contribute to our self-esteem? Do they make us feel loved? On the contrary, do these things not often contribute to a lack of emotional, physical, and psychological well-being, both for us and for others around us? Do these very things not often hurt us or hamper us more than they help us? Are they not often connected to physical problems, emotional problems, psychological problems, spiritual problems, relational problems, and family problems? In the long run, do they not typically cause more guilt, more shame, more depression, more despair, more numbness, more emptiness, more insecurity, more stress, more anxiety, more complexity, more division, more disunity, more brokenness, more angst, more fragility, more weakness, more laziness, more impotence, more bondage, more dependence, more oppression? In the long run, do they not typically cause more unhappiness than they seemingly or allegedly help to prevent? We usually don't want to think about these things, partly because it doesn't seem very fun. I can't answer these questions for other people. I can't answer them for you, only for myself. And I think I know what the answer is. I think I've come to know what the answer is, even though sometimes I still don't want to believe it. Even though sometimes, like a child, I plug my ears, shake my head, and scream at the top of my lungs in order to avoid the inconvenient truth. That truth, which a part of me, a very real part of me, doesn't want to be true. Evil me, oh yeah, I know, Brock sings in the song Bukowski. Perhaps the most self-aware thing that he sings in the entire song. Maybe even more self-aware and more honest than the title of the final track on the album. The good times are killing me. If they're killing you, then are they truly good? Thomas Oden is a theologian in the Christian tradition. He wrote an 859-page systematic theology called Classic Christianity, which I read when I was in seminary. At the end of his section on the character of God, he talks about the doctrine of divine happiness, a dogma that we simply do not hear enough about in the church today, if we hear about it at all. Growing up in the church, I certainly never heard it taught. Now, this speaks to a larger problem in the church, one that I can't get into right now. But suffice to say, the church, religion itself, is part of the problem here. Far too often, we've emphasized the wrong things. We're looking at this whole thing the wrong way. With this in mind, I would be remiss if I didn't mention that the church has brought a lot of these false perceptions and misunderstandings upon itself, often emphasizing or prioritizing the wrong motivations for moral living, like a future salvation in heaven or the avoidance of divine punishment. But this misses the mark. See, classical Christianity teaches us, and Oden knows this well, that God is eternally happy. He is eternally fulfilled and joyful. He is complete and whole, lacking nothing. And this God of happiness, this God of joy and blessedness, the eternal fount of every blessing, the everlasting giver of all that is good, pure, pleasing, and beautiful, the spring of living water, wants us to be like him, not primarily for his sake, but for our sake. He wants us to be happy. He wants us to share in his blessedness. He wants us to experience life and life abundantly. He wants us to be complete and whole, lacking nothing. But this God of happiness is also the God of holiness and righteousness. In fact, the God of eternal happiness is the God of holy love. The holiness of God, character, moral attributes, virtues like love, joy, peace, forbearance, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control, the holiness of God is an integral part of the happiness of God. The righteousness of God directly contributes to his happiness. It makes him whole. It makes him complete and lacking nothing. And God wants the same for us. He wants us to be happy. So, in and through God, we learn that happiness and holiness are two sides of the same coin. We find that holiness and happiness are like two peas in a pod. We see that the holy life is the happy life, and the happy life is the holy life, and the moral life is the good life, and the virtuous life is the blessed life. This is what John Wesley helped bring to my attention as a graduate student, something that I now know to be true through experience. Like most people, I've had my seasons of immorality, unholy seasons throughout my life. But when I look back on it, I can't help but think that it was all a waste. What did I gain? More than that, what did I lose? It was wasted time, wasted seasons, wasted potential, wasted life. It robbed me of the meaning and the purpose and the beauty and the joy and the peace and the fulfillment and the wholeness of the good life. It prevented me from experiencing the blessedness of God. Wesley was right. We were made for happiness, and happiness can only be found in our joyful Creator, the God of eternal happiness, the God of holy love.